Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right.
I have as much energy now, I feel, as I did when I was a young mechanic about 22 years old joining Formula One in 1991. And that's what drives me forward.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. This week we have the latest in our series of F1 team principal interviews as we sit down with Sauber boss Jonathan Wheatley. Jonathan has been in F1 since 1991. We started at more or less the same time and our careers have run in parallel. He has contributed to 8 Constructors World Championships and 153 Grand Prix victories in various roles with Benetton, Renault and Red Bull Racing, where he won 6 of those titles. He started as team principal in April at Sauber this year, shortly after the Japanese Grand Prix, arriving at work on his first day in a classic Audi Quattro. Since May, the team has seen a significant uptick in form. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, James, for having me on.
Taking on the Sauber team principal role, obviously you were the sporting director at Red Bull Racing for many, many years. What did you bring from that previous experience that helped you to step up to being a team principal?
I like to think that I'm learning every day still. Every day's a new adventure, every day's a new learning experience. I guess in my journey in Formula One, I've learned from great managers, good managers, maybe not so good managers. You form your own management style heading in. But I think at my core, I've always believed in the power of a team. Power of a team all focused on the same direction, all feeling like they understand exactly what their role is, what they can and can't do, when they have to step up, what the communications are like in the team. And I think what I bring with me is just a tremendous amount of experience in identifying young talent, guiding it and bringing it through an organization.
I know you well for many, many years. You're a very disciplined person in every aspect of your life. And as a sporting director and before that, as a chief mechanic, you brought a lot of discipline to pit stops, all of that kind of thing. It was almost like military precision. Does that still apply as a team principal, or do you have to kind of be a bit more sort of soft touch?
Well, maybe a question for a bit later on, I don't know. But look, at the moment, I'm not planning to change how I've always done the job. I'm not planning to change the fact that I believe that in a big team, structure's absolutely key. And I think also in a traveling team, when there's a lot of people that find themselves in very different situations as they go around the world, that I think a pretty robust structure and reporting structure is absolutely essential. And of course, these guys are working under tremendous pressure all the time. So I think knowing exactly what you should be doing at what time is really important.
It's interesting to me to note that there was a cohort of sporting directors, and for people that aren't perhaps so familiar, you know, to my mind, sporting director level, when you were in that group, that those are the people that kind of make this sport tick. You all get together behind the scenes, you sort out things like virtual safety cars, and you just work out the solutions to things. And there's you, there was Laurent Mekies, there is Steve Nielsen. You know, there's a whole, that cohort of people that were at that level have now moved up to be team principals. I mean, you must be very conscious of that now when you sit in a team principal meeting, which is a different kind of meeting from when you were with that group previously in the sporting director level.
Yeah, I've been tremendously privileged through my career. I felt it an honor to represent Red Bull at the sporting group for that long period of time, 19 years or something or other. During that time, that group achieved some extraordinary things, especially in terms of safety, tightening up the regulations in certain areas. Of course, getting the sport back on the road during COVID, which was not a straightforward exercise, as we all remember. So some hugely rewarding times there. And working collaboratively with teams, I found was exceptionally rewarding. And I think also from that, you build relationships, you know, you build trust, relationships through the business that are standing us in good stead now. And the fact that people from that group are being identified as the next breed or the breeding ground for team principals, I think is hugely encouraging.
It's, I mean, team principals, when you and I were growing up in this sport in the 90s, were very adversarial, confrontational with each other. Is it a benefit to Formula One that you guys all kind of know each other now, this cohort that's kind of coming through? That it's unlikely to have that level of confrontation in the next period of time.
I think you build trust and you build relationships over the time you're in the sport. And you, I think, know exactly when you have to represent your team robustly. And everyone understands that. It's not like friendships will be lost or feathers will be ruffled. I think as long as you're honest and you say this is going to be your position going into something, then why should there be any confrontation?
So you go through a brick wall for Red Bull Racing when you're wearing a Red Bull Racing shirt, put a Sauber or Audi shirt on, you go through a brick wall for them against Red Bull Racing, and all's fair in love and war kind of thing.
Yeah, it's your job. You're representing the best interests of your team, and moving forward, I'll be representing the best interests for the Audi Formula One team.
It's early days, as you mentioned. You're only a few months into this. But what are you conscious of what skills you're having to develop? That weren't there, if you like? What muscles are you having to develop as a team principal?
Well, I was looking for a shake-up in my career. I, you know, do I carry on doing what I'm doing, stay at Red Bull for longer, take one of these other job offers that I had in the UK, or this incredible offer to join the Audi F1 project? And throughout that whole process, I guess, you've decided to get out of your comfort zone. And I'm out of it now, and that's what I wanted. And I think time management is the most crucial part. It's very, very difficult. You're pulled from pillar to post. Between Monza and here, where we're recording in Singapore, I think I've only actually been at my home in Switzerland for 3 nights. You know, so you live out of a suitcase a lot. You're all over Europe, all over the world, actually, representing the team and meeting the right people. And I find it exciting, exhilarating. And I guess 6 months in, I'm still finding my feet a little bit.
A well-known name in this sport who's moved teams said to me the other day that conscious that the team he's working in has either forgotten how to win or has sort of never really believed it's possible. And it's quite difficult to get the mentality there to believe that it is possible. And I guess one of the tasks for you, because you're such a serial winner over so many years, is to somehow infuse that into a group.
Yeah, I mean, walking in the door at Sauber in April, I was surprised how young a team it was. So there's a lot of inexperience there, but a lot of enthusiasm as well. Also, it's a team that's been pretty much in survival mode for a long time. Fielding two cars on a Sunday afternoon has been an extraordinary achievement on occasions, and there are so many people in the team, so they're almost heroes what they've done to keep this team on the road. But of course, our ambitions go further than that, and Audi's ambition in the sport is to be winning races and fighting for championships at the end of the decade. So you're right, we have an ambitious road ahead of us. I think we're humble about it. We know exactly what we need to do to beat the greats. You know, with Mattia Binotto, working side by side with Mattia, we know what it takes to win world championships. We know what it takes to get a team there. And we're on that journey, and it's at the beginnings of it. And I think, I'd like to think that you can see the performances on track show that what can be achieved.
You mentioned Mattia there. I mean, he struggled a little bit as a team principal at Ferrari, but he was peerless as a head of engines at Ferrari, particularly the last time there was a big rule change. You know, that Ferrari, there was nothing really wrong with that Ferrari engine in the rule change period. Is it a massive asset to this team to have someone who can speak to the engine builders in their own language and really advance things in a big way?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it was also a big part of the reason why I'm sat here today talking to you. So when Gernot Dullner outlined his vision for the Audi F1 team, which was hugely compelling, you know, I didn't leave a team, I was drawn into this project. Part and parcel of that was in modern Formula One to be at 24 races a year, to be at the sponsor events and the partner engagements you need to be meeting the right people. So do all that and try to pull together a chassis and powertrain at the same time at the factory, I think is is hugely challenging, if not impossible, and especially when you're as ambitious as we are. So the opportunity to work with Mattia, who, I mean, let's face it, who is better placed to pull together chassis and powertrain than Mattia Bonotto, was a huge, exciting part of my reason for signing here at Sauber.
You've always been, as I mentioned earlier, a competitor. You know, there are lots of different roles. You know, I've had my role on this side of the fence, but you've always been on the competition side. You go into every weekend, are we going to do well? Are we going to go home with our tails between our legs? What, as a competitor in Formula One, gives you the greatest buzz when it happens?
Yeah, I absolutely love the thrill of competition. I love this white heat of competition that we're in Formula One. I love the fact that 24 times a year you're judged on your performance and you come out of it with the result. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's hugely, hugely motivating. I have as much energy now, I feel, as I did when I was a young mechanic about 22 years old joining Formula One in 1991. And that's what drives me forward, frankly. And moments like Nico's podium in at Silverstone, you know, I was sat on the pit wall and I was just thinking, as after the checkered flag, well, we'd accomplished a pretty good race there, you know, and a good race sometimes is out of 10 decisions if you get 8 right. Well, we made 10 right decisions. Nico drove flawlessly and I thought, okay, yeah, that was a pretty good, solid result. And I turned around and I saw this explosion of emotion behind me and went, oh, crikey, yeah, this is a big deal. But and so it's moments like that, it's the sporting moments that still make the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first podium for Sauber, I think, since 2012. So no wonder for people that have been around a little while, it was special. Such an amazing season highlight and an early win in a way for you. It's not a win, but, you know, it wasn't sort of metaphorically a win because, you know, three other teams have still yet to score a podium this season. So I guess as someone who's won like 150 plus Grand Prix, you have to temper the kind of the emotion, but because I saw you in the BRDC later that night and you looked as happy as I've seen you when you've won like world championships with Red Bull in the past. So I think it looked to me like by that time you'd really calibrated what it meant.
It meant a huge amount, both professionally and personally. So on a personal level, to be part of a team that's able to do that so quickly, really, in a transition phase was extraordinary. But you want to know what knits you to a team? It's that joy. It's that emotional outburst, and it's the way your team looks you in the eyes after a result like that, and they know they're capable of it. They might have thought it may happen, but now they know that they can do it. And honestly, it drew me even closer into the team. And I sit here today feeling tremendously proud of what we've achieved, and also excited about what we're going to achieve.
So those are the things that give you the biggest buzz as a competitor. But conversely, what are the things that drag you down?
I think I'm a tremendously positive person. I'm always looking forward. I don't have much recollection for what's happened in the past, to be honest, because I think I'm relentlessly driven forward. I mean, the travel doesn't bother me. The odd sleeping patterns don't bother me. Honestly, I don't find anything like a weight around my shoulders. I don't find anything difficult. I love managing people. I love building teams. And like I say, I think this just positive spirit of mine and this optimism. And I always think the team's capable of so much more than it is at the moment. I don't really feel any impediment.
Let's talk about the transition for you as well on a personal level, because you lived most of your life, if not all of your life, in the south of England. And then you up sticks and you actually move to Switzerland, you know, lock, stock and barrel. You know, it's full on commitment. There's no sort of like, well, we'll just rent something and see what happens. This is, you know, you and the fam have gone to Switzerland. How have you found that transition?
Well, I did it in a way that made me bond with Switzerland. I think I drove over in a very old car with the dog and we had all sorts of adventures on the way over. So I kind of felt it was like a rite of passage on my way into Switzerland. And frankly, I thought a great deal about the job. I thought a great deal about what it might feel like, look like at Sauber, what the early, maybe the low-hanging fruit might be early on. I hadn't given any thought to what an extraordinary country Switzerland is and what an amazing lifestyle that I have there now, you know. In the evenings, I can grab my wife, Emma, and we take the dog down to the side of a lake and maybe have a glass of wine and watch the sun go down over the mountains. You know, you engage with nature there. It's safe, it's clean, and it's just beautiful scenery on every level. And I'm really enjoying it, and I'm enjoying the people that I'm meeting.
So bringing it back to the Sauber into Audi transition, it's unusual, very unusual to have such a long transition. Is it 2 or 3 years or something that this has been rolling out over? Normally, if a team changes hands, it either happens immediately or with effect from the beginning of next year or something like that. But to have this very long drawn out transition, what to your mind are the advantages of this approach?
Well, I think firstly, it brought financial stability to the team. A team that's, you know, struggled a little bit for capital investment over the years because it's been surviving, overperforming at times. And so there was a bedrock being put in place from a very early stage. A good business plan being put in place as well. And I think it, like I say, it brought stability. Maybe people that thought maybe it's time to move on thought, well, actually, let's stay and let's see what happens. I mean, it's a tremendously exciting journey we're on, James. I pinch myself moments so many times in the course of my job here. You know, bringing in these major partners, title partner with Revolut, a new banking setup into the business. So extraordinary what we're doing for Formula One, Adidas, you know, BP, these big companies that are committing to us and can see the vision in the project. It's tremendously exciting time to be here, to be honest. And yeah, it might have started a little earlier, as you say, but honestly, when the garage doors open in 2026, this is going to be the Audi Formula One team.
I did a podcast recently on the subject of identity in Formula One. In other words, how a team presents itself, how you show up. And you've always worked for teams that have really got that worked out. I mean, Benetton clearly knew exactly how they wanted to show up. Renault, the same, and particularly Red Bull Racing. I mean, that's like what they do better than probably anybody, right? So you've got this kind of placeholder identity with Sauber at the moment, with the green and all that sort of thing. How do you think Audi are going to show up?
Well, we're in the business of being a disruptor. We're coming into Formula One as a disruptor, a full works Formula One team, largest car manufacturer in the world. You can't just suddenly create a culture within it that it doesn't just happen immediately. You have to get on that journey, and it's in the team. You feel it's in the walls of the building, the culture in the team, the desire to do better, the desire to always improve, to continuously make these small steps that make a big difference at the end. And yeah, to have a sharp, clean operating race team, forward facing, with confidence, the ability to deliver in pit stops, deliver two cars reliably on the grid, support those cars, make the right strategy decisions. It's hugely challenging, it's hugely exciting, and we'll do it our own way.
Talk to me about the growth that's taken place then this season. I mean, what's been achieved behind the scenes on the team development side?
Well, I would say the most significant step has been the upgrade that we put on the car in Barcelona. We had to do quite a lot of soul searching, try to understand where we were losing performance initially with C45. Mattia and the team at the factory, James Key, did an extraordinary job, I think, of putting performance on the car, and then again and again and again. And I think that technical step, especially towards the end of a set of technical regulations that have been coming together for some time now, has been an extraordinary thing. And it's given the team confidence, given the drivers confidence. You even saw it from the onboards in Barcelona. Suddenly, it was a car they could work with, a car that they could drive. And I think that's given us this platform for scoring points and, of course, the podium at Silverstone.
Well, since Spain, 7-point scoring race results out of a possible 9. Pretty decent strike rate in comparison to the closest competitors.
Yeah, and I think an extraordinary performance for a team that started from where we've started from. But look, the car isn't perfect. The team still isn't perfect. We're still learning. The last two races have presented challenges for us. But, you know, even in the last race, we're right on the cusp of points. It only would have taken somebody to make a mistake. And again, it would have been another point scoring finish. And I think in a championship that's as closely matched as it is now, you know, with the first period of qualifying off in the top 20 separated by 0.8 of a second. I mean, to be competing at that level at the moment, I think is hugely encouraging.
I've always been quite impressed with Bortoleto. I remember when he won F3 as a rookie, it was sort of definitely gets on the radar when someone does that. I was also impressed with the way he bought himself a ticket to come to the Autosport Awards because he wanted to meet the big names from the sport. I thought that was pretty that not many 17 or whatever years old he was at the time drivers would think of doing that, but it was that sort of showed ambition to me. He then won F2 as a rookie, and he sort of settled in the beginning of this year, but he's 11-6 up against a very, very quick qualifier in Nico Hülkenberg. How high is his ceiling?
Well, I think I was tremendously impressed with him in Formula 3 and Formula 2, and the fact that he could see the season through. You know, the truly good drivers, the great drivers, are able to see that, you know, this championship season. It's not all about this corner. It's not all about this overtaking maneuver. And to deliver a championship, you need to be consistent over that period of time. And, you know, some people questioned Gabby's speed back then, but he's proved absolutely in Formula One this year that it's there. And his mature approach in Monaco, easy to get sucked into a wall, into a barrier in Monaco. We've seen it happen so many times with young drivers. And I think he's proving that he's the real deal.
I was in your hospitality area yesterday watching him and his teammate Hülkenberg. There's an 18-year age gap between, which must be one of the biggest in the field, if not the biggest, monkeying around the pair of them. Clearly a good relationship.
Yeah, I had to get called out to split them up at one point. No, it's a genuine, warm relationship between them, a huge amount of respect between each of them. And, you know, in Nico, we've got this proven talent, this extraordinarily fast driver. It's one of them all, you know. I was honestly, it was at the Autosport Awards this year that I was told that he hadn't achieved a podium. It hadn't even occurred to me that Nico hadn't had a podium in Formula One. So, you know, on the one side of the garage, you've got that experience. You've got that incredible calmness that Nico brings to his racing, and Gabby's feeding off of that. He's learning what's important. How do you work with your engineers? How do you get the best out of this really large team of people that come to support a Grand Prix? And you know, it's an exciting time here.
You've been very generous with your time. I've got one more question for you. It's a slightly sort of philosophical one if you want, but I'm sure you'll indulge me. I just wanted to sort of get inside your mind a little bit. Which of these two expressions is closest to your personal philosophy as a competitor in Formula One? Good enough is never good enough, which I think is Roger Penske's catchphrase, or don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
I think good enough is never good enough. You should always push yourself, both professionally and personally, at all times. There's always something to be learned. There's always some small, tiny little step that could be made. And if you have an entire team feeling and thinking that way, you can achieve extraordinary things.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Jonathan, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
You're listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices, with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right.
So that was Sauber team principal Jonathan Wheatley speaking to me in Singapore. And I'm joined now by my colleagues Jake Boxall-Legg and Ronald Vording, just to go through what Jonathan Wheatley was talking about there. And first of all, Jake, you've got to say that the upward trend from Sauber is pretty impressive. They ended last season with just 4 points on the board. They're already up on 55 and fighting against Aston and Haas in the championship, not too far off where RB Racing Bulls are as well. So what do you think of the job that he's done so far?
I think it's been a brilliant job. And I think a lot of it was precipitated last year as well. And Jonathan spoke a lot about how this opportunity to work with Mattia Binotto was really compelling for him to join the team. And I think that's kind of where the genesis of all of this starts. You look at where Sauber was last year, and it was almost, it was very much in kind of a holding pattern, let's say. And it was just waiting for kind of this Audi investment and this Audi takeover to kind of come online, and then they were going to do something with it. And I think when Binotto came in, he very much made it clear that you can't just wait. You have to invest now, and you have to continue to keep everything bubbling over and ensure that all of your simulation tools, all of the things that you do in the factory, are kept up to date and contemporary. And Wheatley's just continued that and has kind of set this kind of this pace at Hinwil and with the track team. How do you get the most out of the car at the track? It's all very well having a good car, and it's all very well doing the improvements and getting things into motion, as Binotto had done at the tail end of 2024. But Wheatley has kind of instilled this mentality of, okay, how do we make the most of that? And you could kind of see that. I think the low-hanging fruit that everyone likes to cite is in the pit stops, for example. Sauber had some terrible pit stops at the start of 2024. This year, it has been incredibly quick, and it's been consistent. And it's just about drilling the team to do that. It's about getting the trackside engineers to, you know, let's say, feel enfranchised to make the right changes, how to interpret the driver's feedback, how to interpret the data sets that you're getting from the cars on the track. And, you know, Wheatley has been at Red Bull for many, many years. He's been, you know, part of the engineering team for Michael Schumacher back in the 90s. This is all stuff that he is second nature to him at the sharp end of the grid. Let's say Sauber hasn't necessarily had that over the last few years. So I think what he brings is valuable, but it's all about leading from the front. And, you know, he's such a good figurehead for the team as well. And you just kind of look at Jonathan, you kind of think, you know, he was meant to do this. He just sort of understands what it means to be a team principal.
It's interesting because he's one of that group, that cohort of the new generation of team principals that have spent quite a lot of time as sporting directors within their teams. The sporting director level, as I mentioned in the interview, is the one where they kind of really get things done. And you've got your Laurent Mekieses and your Steve Nielsens and what have you, who are also now team principals. Ronald, I guess in a parallel universe, maybe with the way things turned out, if Jonathan had stayed at Red Bull Racing and they had got rid of Christian Horner as they did this summer, the most obvious candidate to replace Jonathan might perhaps have been, to replace Christian, might perhaps have been Jonathan Wheatley. Of course, it's counterfactual. What's your read on it? And do you think he's nevertheless happy with the decision that he made?
Well, yeah, I think he would have been the first in line if they got rid of Christian. And I also think that's part of the reason why he made the move, because it was no secret in the paddock that he wanted to step up as a team principal. But of course, at Red Bull, the opportunity didn't come, or in hindsight, you could say it didn't come soon enough. So I think he would have been the guy to step up. But I think it worked out pretty okay for all parties. I mean, if you talk to people within Red Bull, they're really impressed by the job that Laurent Mekieses is doing, bringing especially the technical background to the leadership of the team, something that was missing under Christian Horner. And I think he, as JBL said, he's the perfect man to lead the Audi project, to be honest. One thing in the interview that he mentioned and that I found really interesting is the first day that he walked into Sauber, and he was surprised to see how inexperienced the team was in a way, and how many young people they had, which I think is something he's great to work with in two ways. First of all, he brought in some experience, and that's why where both Jonathan and also Mattia Binotto are really, really valuable. I mean, they've brought in Lee Stevenson from Red Bull. We just heard in Singapore that Max's number one mechanic will leave Red Bull at the end of the year and will make the move to Audi. So, of course, that's partly down to all the context that Jonathan Wheatley had within Red Bull. Binotto has recruited some guys from Ferrari's engine project to Audi, which is also, I think, highly valuable. So they brought in some experience, and at the same time, as Jonathan mentioned himself in the interview, he really enjoys working with young people, identifying talent and giving them the opportunity to grow within the team. And I think the combination of those two elements really makes Jonathan Wheatley the perfect guy to lead Audi into the future. And I think we've seen glimpses of it so far in 2025, which is, as JBL pointed out, more the operational side of things. but also on the grand scheme of the team and how Hinwil and Neuburg and their Donau, how it has to work together. I think for all those aspects, Jonathan Wheatley is exactly the guy they need. So yes, if he stayed at Red Bull, he probably would have been team principal there. But I guess some people within the Audi management are really, really happy that he didn't stay and that he went for this opportunity instead.
Of course, he's gaining great experience. He's going to have manufacturer experience working with Audi over the next few years. But I'm sure, you know, he's still a relatively young man. He's in his late 50s. So there's still scope if he wanted to, I'm sure, at a future date, perhaps to go back to the team that he helped build over the last 20 years. But nevertheless, this is the new adventure. This is where he is. There has been, I think it's been not always super clear exactly who's in charge within that team. You know, they had a team principal, CEO. You know, they had some changes there. Then they brought in Binotto. It looked like he was in charge. Then Wheatley's come in, and as far as I can work out, they're sort of equals basically. And the way that Jonathan looks at it, Mattia is in charge of the chassis and the engine side of things, making sure that the two halves are talking to each other, making sure the engine development is on point, and essentially delivering the product to the race team that Jonathan runs and oversees, as well as doing all the political liaison with the FIA, the commercial liaison with F1, and the sponsorship. So as a portfolio, Jake, that's quite a lot to take on, and sort of new muscles he's having to develop, new skills he's having to develop, particularly on the commercial and sponsorship side. You feel he's well equipped for the task?
Oh, I think so. And I think, you know, some of those roles that you mentioned, particularly on the sporting side, he has the support of Iñaki Rueda as well on that front. It's an area that is kind of innately familiar to him. So that's the sort of thing that he understands. I think he said that he wanted to progress, right? And so he takes a role that's very familiar and merges that with more of a sense of doing more media, doing more commercial activities, that sort of thing. It helps that Audi is a manufacturer and it's a huge manufacturer. So you kind of see the sponsorship deals that, and these are the things that Jonathan spoke about. We're seeing this sort of commercial force being whipped into shape, you know, seeing Adidas join the team, Revolut as well, the online banking company, BP as well coming on board, huge globally recognized brands. So the fact that it is Audi makes it a lot more different, and you're now sort of seeing, let's say, elsewhere on the 26 grid, Cadillac start to sort of pull in brands that haven't necessarily been Formula One before, or brands that have lapsed Formula One interest that is now coming back, for example. You know, Formula One's in a very good place, and it does make it a little bit easier. But again, when you're in those good times, it allows him to actually build that kind of active, let's say, experience in that industry. So that, let's just say, for example, that in a few years down the road, Formula One maybe isn't so attractive to sponsors. He still knows what to do in that situation. He still knows how to pull them in. So I think that's always the way, isn't it? With a new role change, you learn new skills and you build, as you say, new muscle and that kind of thing. But ultimately, that's what he wants to do to progress as an individual. And I think that's what, you know, if you do the same thing all the time, which I guess he had done as a very long time as Red Bull sporting director, then you do yearn for something else. So it's always good to do that and sort of build your experience elsewhere.
And a final word, Ronald, on the drivers. He didn't exactly answer my question about how high he thinks the ceiling for Bortoleto is, but he's performed very well. I mean, 11-7 up on Hülkenberg in qualifying this season. Hülkenberg obviously had that podium in Silverstone, so he's ahead on the points side. But the balance of that experience is interesting. I watched them in the hospitality area at Sauber in Singapore, and there's an 18-year age difference between Bortoleto and Hülkenberg, which is as big as any in the Formula One field. But it's quite fun watching them monkeying around together, because you know, they can both be serious, but they also have a good rapport, and I think they're pretty well balanced pairing, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, they've got the perfect mix of experience and also the young talent. I think I've been more impressed with Bortoleto than what I thought going into the season. Yes, he was really good in the junior formulas, but to deliver this quickly in Formula One, it's probably something I didn't expect. But he clearly has the raw speed. I think he also has the technical understanding of the sport, which is really, really important, especially if you're part of a project like the Audi project, where technical feedback in terms of growing the project as a whole is really important. And then they've got Nico's experience as well. So I think on the driver front, they are good for the upcoming years, with Nico probably building the project. And I think Bortoleto will eventually become the main guy. Nico can prove me wrong, but will probably become the main guy to deliver on track in the upcoming years. And it fits perfectly to the stage that Sauber, that Audi is in. And I think Jonathan spoke about it in the interview in a very interesting way. He said, okay, this team was in survival mode for quite a long time, where the main goal was to at least get two cars on track for a Sunday afternoon's race. And now the whole mindset of the team has to change, because it has to grow like a winning culture for the long-term future. And I think that's also another aspect that Jonathan himself is bringing from Red Bull that's crucially important. And in that regard, there are also some key similarities between Sauber and Aston Martin. I've had an interview with Andy Cowell in Singapore, and he said exactly the same. He said also this team has been about survival for quite long, and now we have to change the mindset and have to create that winning culture. And at both teams, they brought in some high-profile management signings. Of course, Cowell himself, Adrian Newey for designing the car. To some extent, you see the same with Binotto and Wheatley at Sauber. And if you look at the lineup, I think probably Audi even has a slight advantage there, because Fernando is the experienced one, partnered with Lance Stroll. But for the long-term future, if Fernando really quits at the end of 26, they probably need to do something. Traditionally speaking, Aston Martin always went for multiple world champions, so maybe they will go after Max. Although Cowell told me, as Toto Wolff said, I'm not able to do a handstand. He said, I'm not even able to do a handstand in the swimming pool. And Audi is basically taking a trajectory of growing that, let's say, their own champion themselves by giving trust to Bortoleto, giving him time and developing over the years. And I think especially also on that front, the experience that Jonathan has can be really, really valuable. So yeah, both in terms of management structure and driver lineup, I think they're in a pretty good place for the future, to be honest.
Yeah, Bortoleto's used to being a champion. He won F3 as a rookie, then went on to F2 and won that as a rookie. And only the special drivers do that, like Piastri, Leclerc and Nico Hülkenberg, his teammates. So there we go. So Sauber, only 2 points now off their best ever full season points tally during the hybrid era since 2014, which was going back to the Alfa Romeo days, having been on 0 points at this stage of last season. So that is a pretty good indication of the state of play for the team as they are going to end this hybrid era on a high, clearly, before transitioning to Audi with a new set of rules for next year. Well, that will do us. My thanks to Jonathan Wheatley, to Ronald Vording, to Jake Boxall-Legg. You can read Jake and Ronald's insightful work on Autosport and Motorsport. Check out all the latest F1 news and insights from the Grand Prix on the Autosport and Motorsport channels. Remember to send in your comments and questions to @JamesAllen on F1 on X. My thanks to producer Ben, and thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow, leave us a review, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We will be back with another podcast very soon.
You've been listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, check out the Autosport F1 channel, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right Rug.